This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Legislation deregulating commercial banks is moving through Congress and is expected to come up for a vote in the Senate this fall. Among the issues being considered are laws that would allow banks to sell insurance, cross interstate lines to open branches, and return to the securities business. We're all too familiar with what happened to the savings and loan industry after Congress deregulated the thrifts. Stephen Pizzo, in an article in the upcoming issue of Mother Jones magazine, says he fears that commercial banks will face the same troubles as the SNLs. Pizzo is a freelance writer and author of Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loans. He also writes for the trade publication National Thrift News. Pizzo has been following the banking industry since the early 80s.
Well, I was running a real estate investment company actually in Northern California in 1980, 1981, and had an opportunity to buy something that was not real estate. It was a newspaper that was going out of business, and I picked it up cheap, and I knew nothing about journalism at the time. But it intrigued me, and it was in a small town, and I had visions of becoming the town's Mark Twain. I began to run the thing, and as coincidence would happen, it was October of 1982 when I really took over this newspaper, the very same time that Congress deregulated the SNL industry and President Reagan signed the Garn-St. Germain Act into law. And we had a small savings loan in this town where the newspaper was, Centennial Savings Loan. And as a real estate broker, I began to notice, again, I was not a journalist, but I was a real estate broker, and I began to notice that a lot of the real estate deals this savings loan was doing were like nothing I had ever seen before. And I began to follow their activities, and that led to the publication, I guess, some 5 years later of our book.
In investigating thrifts, did that naturally lead to commercial banking? Are these really twin systems?
Well, in a lot of ways, yes, in the sense that a lot of the people we found looting savings and loans around the country had come originally from the banking industry. Banking had been a little bit more freewielding than savings and loans had been before they were deregulated. Savings loans, of course, were relegated to just making home loans until 1982. So the crooks were really over at the banks. They'd always been there, sort of traditionally been there, for the same reason Willie Sutton and Bonnie Clyde had been there, because that's where the money was. But when Congress deregulated the SNLs, they moved wholesale over into the SNL business and looted it into insolvency. Now, the same people, I might add, most of them are not in jail, as we well know, are back in the banking industry. And what they're waiting for now is for Congress to deregulate that industry.
You're talking about crooks. You're talking about looting. Do you think of these people as robbers?
Oh, absolutely. These people are sociopaths. They're some of the best criminal minds of our time. And I think one of the real crises, you know, we hear about the SNL crisis. I think America's facing a more serious crisis than just the SNL crisis. And that is coming to terms with the concept of white-collar crime. I might say white-skin crime, too, because it's that also. These people do not fit the image that Americans have of criminals. They're not threatening. They're not inner-city people. They wear suits and ties and drive around in stretch limos. But I'll tell you, they're as big a crooks as have ever walked the face of this earth. And they are one of the prime reasons that we are $500 billion lighter on the SNL side of the balance sheet.
I think what some of these people might say to you is that they are just taking advantage of laws and regulations that Congress set forth.
Well, you know, they certainly did that. I won't argue with that. And Congress got paid very well by these people. Congress became really the net beneficiary of the larceny that they unleashed on the SNL industry, because these people knew that unless they shared with Congress, Congress could change the law back to the way it was before. So they were shoving, they were tithing, they were sending a portion of their booty off to Washington during this whole thing, which is one of the reasons why we ended up with the Keating Five and a number of other congressmen and senators who threw themselves between these crooks and regulators when the regulators tried to yank them out of their shops.
What do you think the lessons of the SNL crisis are?
Well, the lessons are that when you have federal deposit insurance, when the government is going to underwrite this kind of activity, that you want to have, first of all, very little activity, so it's easy to regulate and to monitor. You need a lot of examiners, and you need to fund that system so that you can have regular examinations of these institutions to make sure that they're toeing the line.
Let's go back just a couple of decades. What safeguards were instituted after the 29 crash and the Depression to prevent banks from further and future collapse?
Well, in 1929, we lost about 10,000 banks, a lot of them because of the fact that they were speculating the stock market with their depositors' money. Now, there was no federal deposit insurance in those days, and that precipitated a run on the rest of the banks in this country. So Congress instituted federal deposit insurance, and it also instituted the Glass-Steagall Act, which banned banks from mucking around in Wall Street anymore. And that law has been on the books. The banks hated it. The banks liked deposit insurance, but they hated the Glass-Steagall Act, and they have been tireless in their efforts to get it overturned and be chipped away at it, and it looks like now they are approaching success in that regard.
It seems to me that banks have two major responsibilities. One is to be a safe place where individual people, where companies can put their money, and I assume part of that investment then provides a kind of stability to the economy. They also need to turn a profit. Do you see these as kind of mutually exclusive responsibilities, and can they do both, do you think, in the 90s?
Well, the public is being purposely confused on this whole issue of the state of the American banking industry. The public should understand there are really two banking industries in America. There are 12,500-odd banks in this country. 9,500 of those banks are small and medium-sized community banks. You know, the bank that knows your name when you walk in the door. They're small-town banks. They finance small local businesses. They finance local farmers and whatnot. Then you have the rest of them, and these are your large and your mega-large, your money center banks, your Citicorps, your Hanovers, your Chemicals, your Bank of Americas. That is the segment of this industry that's in trouble. Now, why are they in trouble? Well, they're in trouble because during the 80s, they abandoned their traditional customer base, small business, consumer loans, home construction, and they went chasing after the brass ring. They went after financing and participating in leverage buyouts. They went into financing and participating in commercial development craze around this country that has resulted in massive overbuildings of office buildings, which are now sitting vacant. And they lent tons of money to the developing countries, the third world, on the theory that, geez, you know, why make 10 million dollar loans to a bunch of small business people and then have to kind of count those payments every month? Let's make one $100 billion loan to Brazil, and then we have only one monthly payment every month to count. We'll fire the servicing department and save money. Well, that works fine, except that they neglected what everybody else in the world knew, that in Central America, the national treasury belonged to whoever had the key that week, and a lot of that money just disappeared. Now, anybody could have told them that, but they did it anyway.
Stephen Pizzo is my guest, and he's a journalist. He has an article in the September-October edition of Mother Jones on efforts in Congress to deregulate the banking industry. The article is called The Trillion Dollar Question, and in the article, Stephen Pizzo warns that deregulation will do to banks what it did to savings and loans. Are you saying that, on the whole, that the banking industry in this country is healthy?
Yes, you bet. The banks that stayed with their traditional markets are healthy. In fact, I want to also add the savings and loans that did not avail themselves of their expanded powers, the ones that simply stuck to owner-occupied home lending, they're still around and they're profitable too. It's the savings and loans that went out after that brass ring that fell off their horse and broke their neck. Same thing goes for the banks.
If there are, though, these regulations, these rules and regulations that banks have to follow, how were these so-called large, mega-large banks able to then go for this brass ring if in the end they were very shaky investments?
Well, you have to understand that a banker doesn't... if an investment is shaky, that's the kind of thing you and I would consider if we were investing our own money. This is not their money. This money is depositors' money, which is federally insured. So it is a classic heads they win, tails we lose situation. If they go out with this money and gamble on some leverage buyout or some big commercial development and they make a fortune on it, they get to not only keep the points and the fees that they are able to pocket on making the loan, but then there are also their participation in the project. If they lose, though, and the bank ends up failing because of that, then the taxpayer picks up the loss.
Why would they want, though, their own bank to fail?
Well, they don't want it to fail. But again, the incentive to be careful there is not the same incentive that you and I have when we're investing our own money. They're gambling with other people's money, and not only is it other people's money, but it's federally insured other people's money. I mean, some investment advisors that gamble with other people's money, if they lose it, those investors can turn around and sue him or her. Here with a bank, nobody's going to sue them because, well, the federal government might. But the depositors are not going to care because the day the bank closes, the government's standing there with a check for them to cover their deposits. So they don't have the kind of constraints and worries when they make their investment that a person working with their own money does.
I'm speaking with Stephen Pizzo, and he's a journalist. He has an article in the September-October edition of Mother Jones on efforts in Congress to deregulate the banking industry. The article is called The Trillion-Dollar Question. And in the article, Pizzo warns that deregulation will bring down banks in this country. And he testified before the Senate Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee this past summer, arguing against bank deregulation. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with journalist Stephen Pizzo. Who is calling for bank reform?
Well, primarily the Association of Bank Holding Companies, which is the lobby group for that large sector of banking, the mega banks. They represent them, and the Bush administration are calling for it. And the lobby group that I just mentioned is paying very well. I mean, people ask now, how on earth did we ever deregulate SNLs? Why did Congress do that? Well, for the reason that Congress does a lot of stupid things. They were paid to do it. Back in 1981, 1982, the U.S. League of Savings Institution, which was the main lobby group for SNLs, was just shoving a ton of money to members of the House and Senate banking committees. Now we have the Association of Bank Holding Companies doing the same thing, and so far they've shoved about $3.5 million to just the 52 members on the House Banking Committee.
You're brushing this whole issue with some very broad strokes, and you seem to be implying that the banking industry, white men in fancy suits, cannot be trusted.
Well, I think we saw that already with the SNL industry. I don't know how many more times we have to learn this lesson. Congress tends to rely far too much on its reliance on what it calls firewalls. For example, they say, well, we can let banks into the securities business because they're going to have a securities holding company, but the regulations are going to say that the bank can't make loans to its securities trading subsidiary to prop it up. Well, there were firewalls like that in the SNL business. For example, an SNL owner was not supposed to make loans out of his own SNL to himself or his companies or his partners. But what they did was they just found another SNL crook who would make loans to him, and he'd make loans to them, and they'd link up into these 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 thrift daisy chains where they just made loans to one another in a big round circle until they had looted one another's SNLs into insolvency. Now, what will the banks do with that kind of a technique? Well, let's look at this scenario. You've got Citibank and Bank of America and Manny Hanny. They've all got their securities trading subsidiaries now, and they're really cooking. And all of a sudden, we hit a Black Monday, an October 19th, 1987 again, and the market starts plummeting. Well, we're not going to take them very long to realize that all I have to do is pick up the phone, and that other banks have securities trading subsidiaries too, and they'll say, listen, Bank of America, you make loans to our clients, we'll make loans to your clients until this whole thing is over, and then we'll settle these accounts. And it's better to have a few angry regulators around saying we violated the spirit of the law than to fail. And that's exactly what they'll do. And in the twinkle of a couple of program trades, we'll see a few billion federally insured dollars go right down another rat hole. I guarantee you they'll do that. In fact, if you want an object lesson from history, Continental Illinois Bank. It cost the government $4.5 billion to bail out Continental Illinois. And in October 1987, Black Monday, when the stock market crashed, Continental made $385 million in loans to its own stock options trading subsidiary in direct violation of the law, and regulators who were in the bank at the time did not act. In fact, they participated in it by ruling that the loans were actually necessary if Continental was going to survive. So the lesson here is that when a bank gets so big that its failure can disrupt the financial markets, that even the regulators, the cops, are going to be forced to go along with the banker's desperate and often illegal attempts to survive. That's the lesson.
What makes deregulation so irresistible to Congress, do you think?
Money. Look, they're being paid for it now in the form of huge campaign contributions, and they learned that after they deregulated savings and loans, they opened up an absolute treasure chest of money that was coming to them out of these high-flying savings and loans that were just shoving money to Washington like it was coming out of a high-pressure fire hose. They missed those days, quite frankly, and they know that if they deregulate banks, they'll reopen that spigot.
Why logically, though, would Congress ignore or bring on another crisis in the proportion or probably even in greater proportion than the SNL crisis when it's so clear that the country is suffering, having to pay the bills for the current SNL crisis? Why would Congress want another banking crisis?
Well, I don't know. And I think they're kidding themselves. I think they're in denial. They've been listening to these bankers who are extremely persuasive and throw a lot of economic arguments out there. They bring in a lot of economists to tell them this is absolutely necessary. And you've got Alan Greenspan himself, the Federal Reserve chief, backing this to the hilt. I asked Congress when I spoke to them why it was that nobody seemed to remember that it was in 1985 that it was the same Alan Greenspan, then a private consultant, who was sitting in front of them in the employ of none other than Charles Keating, who had paid him $40,000, to come and tell Congress that Lincoln Savings Loan was a great thrift, doing great things, and was, quote, no threat to the insurance fund. This is the same man who called those shots completely wrong, because now, of course, we know that Lincoln is going to cost taxpayers maybe as much as $3 billion by the time it all shakes out. So Congress tends to listen to people even when they've been proven wrong in the past.
So you're saying hundreds of people in Washington, D.C. are in denial?
Apparently so, because this legislation is sliding right through.
Where is the legislation? And I know that the Senate and the House Banking Committee have both passed some bills regarding bank reform.
The House Banking Committee has passed the bill, which pretty closely mirrors the Bush administration's original proposals, which would allow banks to get into the securities business to sell insurance. We all know how well insurance companies are doing now, don't we? And allow corporate ownership, allow companies like General Electric and Exxon to own their own banks. The Senate Banking Committee has not yet issued forth its bill. It's still arguing over the issue of corporate ownership, but other than that, it's prepared to let banks back in on Wall Street and to sell insurance and such. Meanwhile, the legislation on the House side is held up at in Senator Dingell's committee. It was Senator Dingell, Congressman Dingell, Representative Dingell, whose father in 1933 argued so eloquently for the Glass-Steagall Act. So it's interesting to see that it's now his son who is a roadblock against letting banks back into the securities market again, 60 years later.
I'm speaking with Stephen Pizzo. He's a journalist, and we're talking about efforts to deregulate the banking industry. Can you have deregulation with greater oversight? Would that take care of part of the problem?
Well, you need greater oversight if you're going to deregulate, that's for sure. But the way that the kind of bill that has come out of the House Banking Committee, if it were to pass into law, would allow banks to do all of this in the stroke of a pen, branch interstate, which they've not been able to do before, get into the securities business, form their own insurance companies and sell that insurance to their banks. All of this going on all at once, it's going to create an absolutely impossible regulatory environment. By the way, again, I keep hearkening back to the SNL crisis. That's the thing regulators will tell you now. SNL regulators will tell you happened in 1982. Congress deregulated the thrift industry in a careless way, allowing them to get out into non-traditional areas. And the poor examiners were going into these thrifts. And a month earlier, all they had to examine were a bunch of very easy-to-understand home loans. 6 months later, they show up, and here the same thrift has investments in Wendy's restaurant franchises, windmill farms to generate electricity. And these poor examiners are looking and saying, how am I supposed to value these investments? How am I supposed to know if they're sound? And in the end, for the first few years, all they did was take the savings loan owner's word for it. Is this a good investment? You bet. Well, that's what's going to happen with the banks, too. It's going to be a frenzy out there, a feeding frenzy, as big banks go around this country and gobble up, Pac-Man style, the small community banks, which who are happy and not in trouble right now. But the big banks will get out there and acquire them all around this country in a mad feeding frenzy to build their branching structure.
Where was the public outcry about the SNL crisis, and why isn't the public concerned about what's happening to the banking industry?
Well, you know, this is really the sad. You know, we do get the kind of government we deserve as a country, and I guess we get the kind of scandals we deserve, too. The public considers banking a big yawn. The press considers it a big yawn. When SNL deregulation was being debated in Congress, you go back and read in the press, you're going to find very little written about it. Didn't seem consequential at the time, kind of a strange little boring business story. Same thing's happening now with the banking crisis. Nobody is really covering this in a probing and questioning way. Nobody is really making the comparisons between the savings loans and the banking situation. And the administration, by the way, keeps saying there is no comparison. There is no comparison. These are very different. Well, what do you mean they're different? Where is the difference? Banks are federally insured. Banks take in deposits. Bank makes loans. Where's the different part of this story that I don't understand?
Is that the frustration I hear in your voice?
Yeah, it really has a Mad Hatter's Tea Party quality to it when I sit here and I see Congress listening to people like Alan Greenspan tell them that, you know, now we have to deregulate the banks. You know, they have to, they're using the same words. You go back, read the testimony before Congress in 81 and 82. They're saying the SNLs are not competitive. We need more powers. We need expanded powers. We need more services for our customers. The customers weren't asking for any more services. The SNL guys were asking for the expanded services. But anyway, they're using the same exact arguments. So I sit here and I listen to all this and I say, you know, where is everybody's institutional memory here?
What then safeguards would you and reforms would you institute in the banking industry?
Well, I would basically say what we need in this country is to go back, not forward. We need a conservative base banking industry in this country that makes loans to small business. If we allow banks to be owned by giant corporations. We have these big mergers like we saw with Bank of America and Security Pacific this week. What we're going to end up with is a few huge tumor-like banks that are very tuned into the corporate culture, but not into small business. And you'll see credit from these banks flowing to the corporate culture and starving small business. Well, I've got news for America. Corporations do not create jobs in America. They move jobs out of America. 2/3 of the job creation in America comes from small and medium-sized domestic businesses, and they're not going to get the credit they used to get from banks. The result will be we'll end up with small businesses being starved out, unemployment going up, and Congress having to create some small business administration program on a much more expanded basis, which, of course, will supply credit to small business, but will be mismanaged and will end up costing the taxpayer money. It ain't broke. Don't fix it. Now, if these big banks want to get out in the international community and want to get out into the stock market and sell insurance and stuff, I have nothing against that. Let them do it. But let them relinquish their deposit insurance for the portion of their funds they use for that kind of activity. They say they want to be competitive. Well, I've got news for them. Over in the British banks don't have the kind of deposit insurance we have here. They have 70% up to $25,000. That's all they have. And many banks in the world, Japanese banks included, don't have any at all. So they want to be competitive? Give up their deposit insurance and go to it, guys. But not with my money.
Where do you put your money?
Well, I put it in the banks. I mean, you know, it's safe in the banks. I mean, the government's going to, that's not where they're going to get you. You're not going to lose your money if a bank fails. You're going to lose your money on that bottom line on your 1040 for the next 30 or 40 years while you're a taxpayer, because that's where they're going to get you.
Stephen Pizzo, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Marty.
Stephen Pizzo is a journalist. His article about the banking industry is in the upcoming issue of Mother Jones magazine. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and this is Fresh Air.